DW Africa Link.
If you've been following the news, you've been hearing a lot about the conflict in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Goma, a city recently seized by Rwanda-backed M23 rebels, has become a tragic symbol of the decades-long fighting ravaging Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The city is home to 2 million people at the heart of a region with trillions of dollars in mineral wealth. It remains under rebel control. That's just one of many conflicts across the African continent. So why are regional blocs in Africa failing to resolve prevailing conflicts and crises? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Micah Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
In early February, the Rwanda-backed M23 rebels announced a ceasefire on humanitarian grounds after international calls for the safe passage of aid and hundreds of thousands of displaced people. Now, Congo's government has, however, described the unilateral ceasefire as, quote, false communication, while the United Nations noted reports of heavy fighting with Congolese forces in the region after that. Congo's government says it wants the withdrawal of the M23 rebels. It has been very testing times for regional bodies across Africa in managing conflicts and other forms of political instabilities. Just days after the East African Community, EAC, met over the escalating conflict in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, leaders from the Southern African Development Community, SADC, have also held an extraordinary summit to discuss recent developments in the region. For more on this, let's bring in Fidel Amachi Owusu, a geopolitical and security analyst. Also joining me is DW correspondent in Zimbabwe, Privilege Mushaniri. Hello to the both of you. Privilege, you were there at the SADC summit covering events for us. Can you share the highlights of what was discussed?
In essence, they have reaffirmed their solidarity and support for DRC to pursue peace. If I may read, maybe quote what they said, it was to say that the summit has reaffirmed its solidarity and unwavering commitment to continue supporting the DRC in its pursuit of safeguarding its independence, sovereignty, and territorial integrity, and as well as sustainable peace, security, and development. Some of the highlights were a resolution to convene a joint summit with the East African Community to deliberate on the way forward regarding the security situation in Eastern DRC. I think in the past week, we have seen that the EAC convened its own emergence meeting where they resolved that they also wanted to have a joint summit with SADC. The other thing they also did was that they committing to immediately dispatch ministers of defense, chiefs of defense, and those that are contributing to troops that are in the what they call summit DRC troops, the one that is comprising South Africa, Malawi, and Tanzania. But in essence, I would say that the communique, most people expected it to be more punchy than what came out. It was more lukewarm than what people would have expected. Some of the things that, you know, it's not really bold and decisive in terms of what people would have expected.
You see, that is interesting. That is interesting because you definitely spoke to some of the delegates and the people around. What were they expecting to get, which led to the disappointment because they did not get that?
Some of the resolutions that people were expecting is to take a decisive action. If they are saying maybe probably they are going to take the M23 head on, or if other SADC member states are going to increase the battalion that is already operating in DRC, because right now you only have those three countries, South Africa, Tanzania, and Malawi. So in terms of the SADC force that is there, some people think probably it's weak. They may need to beef it up. Tshisekedi was there in the meeting virtually. What people would have expected was to have a concrete roadmap to say these are the steps that we should take. If it is negotiations for a ceasefire, these are the steps that we are going to be taking. How are you going to bring the warring parties onto the table? Already we have had threats by the M23 to say they are marching on to Kinshasa, to the capital. How are you going to counter that? So all those issues did not really come out in what they resolved to do when they produced a communique at the end of the meeting.
Right, right. So clearly, Fidel, people are not super convinced after the SADC meeting that anything is going to change on the ground. That's from the reporting from our correspondent, Privilege. Let me come to you on your personal assessment, your own assessment of how EAC and SADC overall have handled the crisis in DR Congo, and also what you make of the summit that just ended.
DRC is the only country that belongs to SADC, the EAC, and ECAS, the Economic Community of Central African States. By virtue of location, it has the right to join any of these regional blocks, and it has eventually done so. The last one was with the EAC, the East African Community. That was in 2022. However, this has not come easy, because then after the country joined the EAC, Kenya, South Sudan, and other EAC countries sent forces to Eastern DRC to establish some stability, or to push for some stability. But that did not work, because it did not go in favor, or it did not go according to plan. That is, Kinshasa did not like the way the EAC handled the peace mission or the stability mission in Eastern DRC. And eventually, when the mandate ended, there was no renewal. That made the situation very unpredictable, in the sense that EAC had to leave. And so SADC came in with South African and Tanzanian forces coming in to make sure that there was some stability in the Eastern DRC. But eventually, as we saw in the past few days, that did not also work. But the interesting aspect is that, unlike the EAC, where Rwanda is a member state of the bloc, in SADC, Rwanda is not a member state. And so it looks like when it comes to SADC, the authorities in Kinshasa are more comfortable dealing with countries in the SADC region than that of the EAC, because the presence or the membership of Rwanda complicates the situation in the EAC.
I mean, talking about complicating the situation, it does really sound like a complicated situation, isn't it? Because it, basically, as you're trying to explain the positioning of the DRC, you know, making it somehow an issue of three different blocks, so to speak, or Rwanda not being part of all of those blocks. So give us a sense of why this has made it so complicated that arriving at some sort of solution has evaded everyone that is attempting to do it.
It is indeed complicated. And to make a quick correction, Rwanda is actually part of the EAC, but not a member state of SADC. That was what I said. And this means that when it comes to the EAC, the DRC, that is also a member of the EAC, is not comfortable with Rwanda's presence. And in fact, Paul Kagame, the president of Rwanda, has been a towering figure in the region. Many of the heads of states in the EAC community, or in the East African community, came to meet him as head of state. Many countries have changed their leaders, but Paul Kagame is still in place. So he enjoys that kind of aura and respect in the region, and some people are not able to reproach him. And so the DRC, or Felix Tshisekedi, is not comfortable with dealing with the EAC. But when it comes to SADC, Rwanda is not a member of SADC, and so Tshisekedi is able to leverage his sole presence in respect of the two countries to actually push his agenda. And that is how come South Africa, Zimbabwe, and other SADC countries seem to back the DRC, because then they are backing a member state of SADC. Now, the other complication is that currently many European powers like Germany, the UK, and even the European Union have started questioning the role of Rwanda. And some have even called off discussions and aid and threaten to withdraw aid from the country. This means that Paul Kagame is also in a difficult situation. Even though he sounds defiant, he is in a difficult situation because, one, he's not openly saying that he's backing the rebels, but then again, he's not also ruling out the fact that he's backing them. And that kind of strategic ambiguity is really adding to the complication of the conflict. The new thing is that after the rebels took Goma, they've set their eyes in the southern towns to create a buffer and to take control of supply lines in order to really deal with any retaliation or any response from the DRC forces, who anyways have been joined by Burundian forces. This means that the DRC that shares boundary with nine other countries in Africa is in a precarious situation and therefore likely to create some vortex that could draw in multiple countries. And the ethnic dynamics in the region could make this more macabre or deadly for the continent.
Right. So you know what? Let's try to break things down, right? To understand exactly what's going on in the DRC. What is happening? Where does Rwanda come in? What's the relationship with Rwanda DRC? What has made everything so murky? Can you sort of make it as simplified as possible for us to understand why this is happening and what's going on?
This started pre-colonially and then in the colonial times and even after independence, where ethnic dynamics, as we all know, African borders were drawn in Europe. And so it means that ethnic groups were divided by the European scramble for Africa. And that is well known. Now, at the end of the day, it means that in the Great Lakes region, some common ethnicities are found in different countries. This means you find a group of people in Rwanda who are also in the DRC, Uganda, and other Burundi and other places. Now, in the case of DRC, DRC is the second largest country in Africa, which means since independence, the authorities in Kinshasa have always found it difficult to control the whole country. So state presence and penetration is a difficult challenge for that country. Eventually, it has led to rebellions, ethnic clashes, and things like that. Under Mobutu Sese Seko, he was able to manipulate ethnic groups against the other. But the issue of the Tutsi minority in Eastern DRC is a precarious one. One, the ethnic groups in the DRC who are not Tutsi believe that the Tutsis do not have any space in the DRC. On the other hand, some also agree that, well, the Tutsis have some space in the DRC, but it's a limited space. And that is how come in recent days you found Paul Kagame trying to argue that the rebels are not from Rwanda. They are Congolese. And that is one dispute or one disagreement that is prolonging this conflict. Because in Kinshasa, the authorities say that, well, the Tutsi group or the rebel group that is mainly Tutsi does not belong in DRC. But the Rwanda side also claims that, no, they belong to DRC. Now, there's another factor where Rwanda is also accusing the DRC of supporting Hutu rebels against its interests. And that is also denied by Kinshasa. But in both cases, there are some truth because we know of Hutu rebels that are against Rwanda and M23 who are Tutsis that are against the DRC and who are supported by the opposite sides. And so we find a proxy war actually happening in this country. But the other thing is that this Eastern DRC is well-resourced in terms of natural resources. It's one of the places where you can find the cobalt for the Silicon Valley industries, the coltan, the gold, and all the others, lithium. And so this conflict is not only about ethnicity and the politics, it is also about resources. And that is making it more complex.
I have to say, you have found a pretty good way of breaking down a very complicated situation to us. I believe I'm not the only one that thinks so. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's really gotten to a point where, as you say, there seems to be evidence to back some of the claims. I mean, the UN and DRC, of course, and a lot of other countries believe that the M23 rebels, who are currently seizing more and more parts of the DRC, is being, you know, run or influenced by Paul Kagame of Rwanda. Paul Kagame himself has previously denied it some time ago. He said, no, they are not backing the M23, although you suggest that evidence proves otherwise. So where does it leave us? What needs to be done now to try to really bring the calm and peace that is needed, Fidel?
Yeah. So first of all, one of the things that African Union and the regional blocs need to do is to water down the personality clash between Felix Tshisekedi, president of DRC, and Paul Kagame, president of Rwanda. They don't seem to see eye to eye for some reasons in the past and currently, which maybe we will find another time to discuss. But then when there's a personality clash or the two leaders do not see eye to eye, sitting around the negotiating table or the negotiation table is always difficult. Now, Angola, for the past years, has played a mediatory role. But it is a difficult one because then at every particular point in time, one of the leaders is raising an objection against the other or bringing in a comment that the other passed. For instance, sometime Felix Tshisekedi vowed never to sit with Paul Kagame. And then he later rescinded his decision and then decided to sit with him. Eventually, Paul Kagame was not also interested at the point when Tshisekedi was interested to meet with him. So these issues, the personality issue is very important. Again, inclusivity. Despite what we see to be a proxy war, in the DRC itself, there's a need to be some inclusivity where ethnic dynamics, people must, the winner takes all in politics should end in the DRC. And I think some time ago, I wrote on this, that it is important that Felix Tshisekedi brings all the groups around so that they all feel a part of the state building process. Then we come to being forthright with Paul Kagame. I think that when it comes to Paul Kagame, because of the delicate history of Rwanda, that kind of massacre, that he is seen as a messianic figure, not only in his country, but across Africa, that he actually salvaged the situation. Now, with that, it means that when people feel that they are pushing so hard against Rwanda, perhaps they are revisiting or they are trying to bring back memories that are so unsavory. However, I think that despite this history, there is a point where someone must stand up to Paul Kagame and tell him that, look, this must end. And recently, it looks like the South African leader had done so, and Paul Kagame was not so pleased because he said that he was ready for a confrontation.
Privilege, let me come to you. I mean, Fidel has really taken his time to try to break things down for us. The hope is that people will not resort to putting more boots on the ground to aggravate the ongoing conflict or increase tensions. But Privilege, tell us, does it appear that the SADC delegates are sort of rethinking contributing troops to DR Congo to fight the rebels, especially the M23 rebels, who the UN suggests is being backed by Rwanda? What's the sense that you get? More discussions or putting more boots or troops on the ground?
At the end of the Friday summit, you get the sense that there is no appetite to increase boots on the ground. Rather, they are going the diplomatic way, holding more of talks. But as to if they are going to be able to bring your hotheads on the table, I think our guests rightly pointed out the egos that a person like Paul Kagame has, and even Tshisekedi himself. It was evident during the EAC virtual summit that Tshisekedi was not present in the meeting. So there's then the need to find a way to bring all the people concerned on the table to discuss the issue of boots on the ground. I think for now, there is no appetite to do that.
Let me come to you, Fidel, because why do we still need these regional blocks? Are they still relevant? And is there a genuine concern from your side, Fidel, that, if they are not serving its purpose and trying to create peace and calm in the regions that they hold, that these regional blocks, could disintegrate or could be broken apart?
Okay. So the first thing is that when In 1963, the AU or the OAU was being formed. It had two schools of thought. Those who thought that Africa could become a federation all of a sudden for at the time, and those who were known as the gradualists, who thought that, well, we had to take our time. Now, over time, the gradualists also felt that there was a need for regional economic communities or regional blocks in order to start the integration from various regions and then come together as a continent with time. That was the main reason why the EAC, ECOWAS, ECAS, SADC, Arab Maghreb Union, and others, and IGAD were created in order to start integration at the various regions. That has meant that when it comes to security or stability, these regions have taken more responsibilities in their respective areas. So in ECOWAS, we saw Liberia, we saw Sierra Leone, where ECOMOC or West African forces were used to stabilize the region, and later some political solution came out. So we cannot rule out the essence or the importance of this regional blocks entirely. But in the case of what is happening in the DRC, it is long overdue. We have to really tackle it. Now, what happens is that the structure is such that when, before the AU security architecture is actually utilized fully, it must have started from the regional level. So in this case, EAC and SADC. But this is a situation where Rwanda is not a member of SADC. So when you are having a summit, Paul Kagame will not be seated there until he's invited. He will not be seated there because he's not a member. And where Felix Tshisekedi always feels comfortable with SADC rather than the EAC because he doesn't want to see Paul Kagame. So in this case, perhaps the DRC joining EAC was needless.
What in your experience, right, and you've written extensively on this, researched extensively on this, what should happen now to really ease tensions and somehow tackle the current crisis in the DRC?
For the first time, I see the international community having some consonance in their approach to Rwanda. In the past, when things were happening, you found divided fronts with Rwanda. The US has called for ceasefire. Germany has called off discussions on aid. The UK has warned that its 1 billion yearly donations to Rwanda is threatened because it will pull it out. And the EU has unanimously condemned it, and it's reassessing. In the last 2 days, it has mentioned that it is reassessing its aid to Rwanda. Now, this means that when that pressure is put on the country, despite the good news we hear from Rwanda, Rwanda is still a very poor country. And in fact, they need that aid to survive. So I think that if Paul Kagame feels that his support is threatened, he may calm down things and perhaps have some or use his influence on the M23 to actually bring peace to the region. That is one significant thing I've seen. And again, this must be reciprocated on the DRC side. So Felix Tshisekedi must also sit down and talk.
Wow. So it's been a lot to unpack, and we will have to keep our fingers crossed and monitor the situation and see how things develop from here. Fidel Amachiowusu, geopolitical and security analyst, thank you very much for your time. Also, DW correspondent in Zimbabwe, Privilege Mushanri, thank you. The ongoing conflict in Eastern DRC exposes deep issues and highlights the recurring failures of African regional blocs. While collective action is urgently needed, national interests and institutional fragmentation persist. Without addressing these structural gaps, organizations like SADC and other regional blocs risk becoming peripheral actors in conflicts they were designed to resolve. But of course, that's not to say there's been no success stories. IGAD, Intergovernmental Authority on Development, has played a significant role in mediating conflicts in the Horn of Africa, particularly in Somalia and South Sudan. ECOWAS has also helped resolve crises in Sierra Leone, Liberia, and the Gambia. And SADC has largely helped promote political stability and resolved conflicts within the Southern African region. So it can be done, and we must strive towards realizing results in the future. So what do you think? Please share your thoughts with us on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. And please don't forget to click follow and subscribe to our DW Africa YouTube channel so you never miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Kaleji. And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW. Made for minds.